you know, and Auntie M was there, and, you know, so it's like that. And what those probably are random firings from different parts of the brain during sleep, during a dream phase. And the little narrator in your brain, if you want to call it, the little storyteller in there, threads those random thoughts together into a story, into a narrative that kind of makes sense, because why else would all those weird things
be
happening?
What about those symbols in dreams having some kind of meaning? You don't think there's something to that?
No, like the flying dreams. What do flying dreams mean? They don't mean anything, because we know when they happen. They happen, okay, you're prone in bed. You're lying down there, kind of in a flat position. And as your muscles, as you get deeper and deeper asleep, and as you go into that first dream phase, about 90 minutes into your sleep, your muscles become unbelievably relaxed while your brain waves all of a sudden become very active. And they used to call this paradoxical sleep, because the paradox is that your brain waves are active and your body is very flaccid. And so that was the paradox. How can that be? Because you're dreaming, that's why. And when your muscles are flaccid and you're very relaxed and you're on a soft mattress, the feeling is like you're floating, and your brain interprets that as like flying.
Hi, this is Jody Paulson from Moscow, Idaho, with What They Don't Tell You. In the 1997 movie Wag the Dog, the president and his spin doctor hired a Hollywood producer to fabricate a war to cover up a scandal in the White House. I remember them filming a scene where a war-torn Albanian woman ducks behind a building clutching a kitten. In reality, the woman was a cheap actress ducking behind a blue screen clutching a bag of potato chips. Sometimes a movie can be more truthful than the nightly news. If you want a good laugh, check out this story from Reuters. Was abducted U.S. soldier a toy? A monitored website in Dubai, which incidentally has been the main channel of communication in recent months for Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, recently posted a poor quality photo of a purportedly kidnapped U.S. soldier threatened by an unseen assailant with an assault rifle. Our Mujahideen has managed to capture the American soldier John Adam after killing a number of his colleagues, said the Mujahideen squadrons in the undated statement on their website. Actually, John Adam appears to be a G.I. Joe-type action figure made by Dragon Models USA, assault weapon included. I could waste a lot of time explaining all the reasons I think anything having to do with al-Zarqawi in the past few months, including the beheading of Nick Berg, is a hoax, but there's a lot of competent researchers doing that kind of work for me. Check it out yourself. In March 2004, the leadership of Allahu Akbar Mujahideen claimed al-Zarqawi had been killed by American bombing. If you think about it, it's actually neoconservative policymakers that have an interest in keeping his legend alive. In a world of Saving Private Jessica and yellow cake uranium, what's there to believe anymore? This morning on my way to the studio, I passed a newsstand declaring Bush, : save Social Security. What? An accurate headline would say Bush Incorporated, loot Social Security. American Heritage Dictionary defines a shill as one who poses as a satisfied customer or an enthusiastic gambler to dupe bystanders into participating in a swindle. I wonder if one could apply this definition to Jeff Gannon, a guy with virtually no journalistic background who enjoys unlimited White House press passes and gets called on repeatedly by Bush so he can ask him softball questions and attack Democratic Senate leaders for being, quote, divorced from reality, unquote. I guess you could call columnist Armstrong Williams a shill. He was secretly paid nearly $250,000 by the Education Department to promote its policy. And what would you call Bush's practice of sending out video press releases disguised as news stories by fake journalists? Maybe Shakespeare was right. Maybe all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. But if you keep your eyes peeled, you might be able to catch a fleeting glimpse of that bag of potato chips.
I'm Jody Paulson. Something there, I think, it's almost like we go out of our way now to find something to worry about.
Someone I love very dearly goes to the doctor. If they have a pain and the doctor doesn't find something, they'll go for one of these scans. And you mentioned something about this. To me, some of these too early diagnoses, these are more dangerous. Sometimes. Yes. There are certain times, obviously, certain things that if you catch it in time, like you said, if there's a brain tumor and you can catch it and you can remove it, wonderful. But oftentimes people are going in for tests that if they can detect a microscopic something or other, and if they don't, then they go for another test and another test. That's causing more damage than health, I can tell you that.
No, I agree with you. It's false positive.
By the way, I agree with you. That's what you said in the book.
Right. I agree with you. All right, we're in this together. You know, it's like you hear a burglar alarm at night in a car. It's mostly not a burglar. That's called a false positive. And when you have these scans and they pick up a little calcium in your artery, which I guarantee you have, I have, we all have calcium in our arteries, your doctor's stuck. Because if your doctor ignores that, your doctor's looking for a lawyer on his case. So what's he going to do? He's going to up the ante and have to do expensive, potentially dangerous tests like angiograms that you don't really need. So these scans create false positives, do not even pick up the cancers that are common in all of us. Don't pick up breast cancer. They don't pick up prostate cancer. They don't pick up really the things that are likely to kill us. So most of medicine really condemns these.
Parents and kids, I want to talk about that because we hit a little bit on it, especially like you said, if you were diagnosed with ADD. But we have this relationship now where parents are so concerned about perfection, as you say, that all it can lead to is disappointment.
Yes, I liked how you put that. I don't think I wrote it that way.
No, I think it might have been. Well, either way, all right. I'll take credit. What the heck?
Well,
I'll give you a little byline on the next time.
We're thinking alike here. Yes, the parents are into this perfection thing, and I think it's created this pseudo-illness, ADD, which I just don't believe is as common as, you know, the pharmaceutical companies would lead us to believe. Doesn't happen in Europe. What's the matter? Only American kids have this neuropsychiatric disorder?
If you think about it, according to your... let's go back to America, liberty.
Sure.
Americans, by their nature, are a bit more aggressive. They're a bit more... Like
Absolutely.
You said, I mean, that's how the world gets changed. That's
Absolutely.
How it happens. And, you know, you drug them. Who knows? We may be drugging someone. Now, I want to be very careful. I am certain that there probably are some kids...
Definitely.
...that might
Absolutely.
Need some medication to help get through the day, just like we do. But... Mm-hmm. It's that fine balance.
There was a discussion in an Archives of General Psychiatry a couple of weeks ago defining creativity. It was a mind blower. You read the definition of creativity. It was among jazz musicians. The definition reads exactly like the definition of ADD. Creative people take in multiple inputs, have difficulty separating them out, synthesize them, deal with them. Well, that's what an ADD kid does. And the list of ADD people from history, in literature, in the arts, music, painting, etc., is a long, long list. And I, indeed, for those people who have ever taken amphetamines, they know You know, take amphetamines, your laundry becomes interesting. You know, cleaning the garage becomes interesting. That's the nature of the drug. So we're taking kids who are bored, who may be more intelligent and more creative, and we're drugging them into submission. And we don't know the long-term side effects, whether indeed this does stifle creativity. ADD kids grow up more likely to own their own businesses. Now, that's a good thing. That's not a kid's going to wind up sitting in a room full of computers. As an adult, I made a very impulsive and ADD-like decision and stormed out of my surgical practice, you know, after going through schools for 15 years. I wouldn't be here today talking to you if not for, I mean, the nice word would be a creative decision. My parents at the time were freaked out. You're going to go to medical school and you're going to walk out on it? And I said, I got it.
For all that money.
For all that money and all that time and energy. And I did, and it was scary, but I found something that I enjoy now.
But now I'm going to take us on the other end of the spectrum, yep, as the book does too, older people. Mm-hmm. Now, here is a situation where we almost have the opposite effect. Here is a case where there is, as we're seeing, a large amount of depression. And again, I think it's a lot societal, not only psychological, but a lot of depression in our older people who, in a sense, are afraid to possibly take a drug that might help alleviate that depression.
Yes, we
it's
have.
It's kind of a weird little...
Yes, we have. It's like moral failure or something. I applaud anybody who has the guts to stand up and want help. And we can help them. Depression in our older people, it's complicated. You know, part of it has to do with the fact we don't value older people. We are a youth-oriented society. Older people often, you know, find when they retire and they get older that life is a little bit different than when you're working and trying to make ends meet and raise your kids and do these things. I think part of it is, you know, we don't teach our young people about interests, about doing things other than, you know, watching television. And it's complex when that happens. But there's so many things that can help. Older people do not manifest depression in the same way that younger people do. They don't like it down. Sometimes in older people, it becomes anxiety. So you have a parent who's very anxious about things, that could be a symptom of depression, and it really, really pays to talk to a specialist and a doctor to get help.
I want to quote you on this, so this time you can't say
okay.
It's me.
Okay, we're out of it now.
No, you're not okay. Getting it. Beauty is a topic that both intrigues and saddens me.
Yes. You know, there's a very high depression rate in people 8 months out after plastic surgery when they all of a sudden realize, oh my God, it did not solve life's problems. And I know from experience...
This is Dr. Dean Adele. He used to have his own radio show and television shows here in Los Angeles, but he speaks the truth so well that a lot of people don't like to, have him around. Dr. Dean Adele on the Impressionistic News Hour, and back to Michael Shermer.
Continue with your phone calls. How about you? Welcome to KABC. Say hi to Dr. Shermer.
Yes, Dr. Shermer, hello.
Hi.
And Mr. K.
Hey.
May I ask if it's a former born again?
Mm-hmm.
What does that make you in the present?
A skeptic.
Oh.
Well, I'm, you know, an atheist, agnostic, whatever.
Atheist or...
Yeah, whatever.
Oh.
Whatever you'd like him to be, sir.
I don't believe in God.
Okay. And now,
why does this jam people up so much?
I think because they generally don't have an understanding of what the scientific explanation for things are. But even if they don't, it's this tendency to say, well, if I can't figure out how things got here, then there must be a God. Instead of just saying, maybe I should look into it further, or maybe we just don't know.
But see, that's my attitude, you know, because I'm a deist. I actually believe in God. So I think God is the explanation for the things that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So until we have an understanding for it, I'm willing to attribute that to God. What's wrong with that reasoning?
Nothing.
But
what does it get you? It doesn't lead to any
further. Give me solace.
Well, fine. That's
comfort.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. But it doesn't lead to a deeper understanding of how things came to be. It's just an immediate sort of a linguistic place for it.
I don't reject that. In other words, there has to be a prime mover, right? There has to be something that came before the Big Bang. There has to be, right? Theoretically.
Well, no.
No.
If not necessarily. If the universe is infinite, then there is no beginning. Now, we know there's a Big Bang, but there could be an infinite number of universes that banged. So there was no beginning, in which case you don't have to have a prime mover.
Well, then what do you call... Well, see, to me, the universe is everything. Everything is the universe. How can you have something that's more than everything or another everything?
There might be multiple universes.
How? How can there be something more than what there is of everything?
Okay, so how do we define the universe? We're defining the universe as the thing that we live in that encompasses everything that there is. But there may be more than that, because it's an expanding bubble, right?
Okay.
Expanding universe that began with a bang. We know that. And we'll probably just end with a whimper.
We don't know that. That's the theory.
That's the theory, Big Bang theory.
It's best evidence
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, but where did that come from? Okay, so now that's a legitimate question. Where did the bang bang? What did it bang into, so to speak? And so one very serious theory is that this is one of many bubble universes which explode out of, say, collapsing black holes in some other universe. So this is the multiverse theory of cosmology, that there was multiple universes and that ours is only one. Now, there's no evidence for this at all. It's kind of they derive it mathematically. It may someday be testable. It's not yet. So it's one explanation. Now, to go back to your question of doesn't there have to be a prime mover? Okay, so forget the answer I just gave because it's speculative. But doesn't there have to be a mover of the prime mover? I mean, we just end up with an infinite regress. Who caused God?
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, well, God is that which does not need to be caused, why can't I say the universe is that which does not need to be caused? And you say, but the universe is a thing and all things need causes. Well, God is a thing. No, God's an agent, not a thing. Okay, but agents have causes. I'm an agent. You're an agent.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is a free agent. Yeah, but free agents have causes. You know, I've done this debate. So,
All right. Caller, did we answer your question at all?
No, not completely.
All right. You want to know why Dr. Shermer doesn't believe. Is that your question?
I'm asking, I would like to ask, have you not encountered the spirit of worship, that urge to acknowledge a creator of all things in all thinking people at some point? Don't you think that's a common thread in human beings?
I think that we are all capable of having spiritual experiences, and you can get that in many different ways. Some people get it through yoga, meditation, chanting, or hiking, dance, music, prayer, thoughtful inquiry, and whatever. There's all kinds of different ways to, I guess, get a spiritual grounding. It depends what you mean by spiritual. We go up to Mount Wilson periodically, and I find that kind of a spiritual experience, to be able to sort of stand inside the dome of the 100-inch telescope where Edwin Hubble discovered that the universe is expanding and that he discovered other galaxies. No one ever knew about those before. And it's almost like, and I've also stood inside Chartres Cathedral in France, and it's a very similar experience. I think there's just not one way to find a spiritual connection to the universe. Because what we're really talking about is a transcendence of self, that there's something bigger than me, something much grander than me and you and the world and so on. And I think probably Sagan's Cosmos was the most spiritual production in the history of television, for my money. Even though it's pure science and he's an atheist, I found that to be a very spiritual, in a way, religious experience.
How about you? A
couple of questions regarding the proof of psychic abilities or whatever. Many years ago on KABC, former talk show host Michael Jackson had Uri Geller in.
Oh.
And they did one of these things where Michael was ready to be a skeptic all the way through, and he by himself drew a picture, and he wanted to see Uri do his stuff. Sure enough, Uri came up within centimeters of drawing the same object that Michael drew.
Yeah, okay, but this is a standard magician's trick. They all do it. They do it. You go to the Magic Castle and you can see exactly what you just described, and it's a trick.
Are you able to explain it?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ways to get the drawing the person made. I'll tell you one way. This is the cheapest way, and good magicians don't do this. But this is one. You can buy this at a store. You get a clipboard. You make it yourself. You get a clipboard with a piece of carbon paper, and the paper that the person's going to sketch on is on that. and the person makes the sketch. You have a couple pieces of paper there. Makes the sketch, and then you say, okay, don't let me see it. And after you make the sketch, tear the paper off the top there, fold it and put it in your pocket, and give me back the clipboard.
Right. Well,
so then you have the clipboard with the drawing there on the other side.
Well, I doubt he even did that. I'm talking about one having a piece of paper with themselves, Yuri having to pick up whatever he's picking up.
Okay, but the point I'm making is that I just described one way to do it. There's a half a dozen different ways to get the drawing that the person made. And
it's a trick. Why are you so why is it so important for you to believe that Yuri Geller is able to do incredible things? Why is that important to you?
Well, if it's such a trick, why hasn't somebody come out and...
Okay, he just told you that magicians do it all. In fact, I've seen magicians do it also. It's a standard magician's trick. He's right. Go to the magic castle, and you can get a magician to perform it for you, just like spoon bending. Magicians can do it. In fact, I've had a guy do it on the show here, spoon bending right in front of me, and he showed me how he did it.
I'm back to
my initial question. Why is it so important for you to believe that Yuri Geller is somehow in touch with the spiritual world? Why is that important to you?
Well, I'm trying to think how he can be the one of maybe, I don't know what percent, 1% of people who have perfected this so much that somebody hasn't already exposed it, like the unmasking of magic.
It has been all exposed and unmasked. All of it. For decades, it's been exposed and unmasked. Unfortunately, there are people like you who glom onto this very good magic act that he does.
It sounds like a good magic act. Well, now...
No. It doesn't sound like a good magic act. Everything that Yuri Geller does has been replicated by magicians. Everything. There's nothing he does that people scratch their heads and go, wow, how did he do it? We can't figure it out.
But it's that argument from personal incredulity that if I can't figure out how he did it, it must be real.
Mm-hmm.
Even though other people can explain it, I can't see it. And that's a very human thing. We all think that. But that's one of the fallacies of thinking that I talk about in my books, is that just the fact that you can't explain it, it's like the people we call the pyramidiots. They think the pyramids were built by aliens because they can't figure out how the Egyptians could have done it. You know, all those Egyptians, they're just stone tool technology. How could they have built these things? I can't figure it out. Therefore, the aliens must have done it. Well, maybe you just can't figure it out. Maybe you should do your homework a little bit more.
I know you talk about that psychic challenge for the $1 million. I have nothing to do with...
Yes. Michael Shermer grabbed off the radio Monday night this week. And I don't know. I played the best portions of it because... I don't know. I'm a skeptic. I have to say it. I'm a straightforward skeptic, and I'm an agnostic when it comes to religion. I don't think we can know this stuff, so I don't even think it's very important, you know. And but I do believe in the religious story of the fall.
We'll be right back.
Cruiser's Creek by The Fall. And that's the end of February 10th, 2005, the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour, which, as of tonight, will now be archived on the Kill Radio site on the day it's done. So if you missed any of it, you can come back and listen. You can listen to it again. You can get all this great knowledge anytime. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Not a lot out there at the moment, but I know your intent. And listen to my music show, The Chill Room, Saturday night. I have a new one coming. Flaming. It'll be the Flaming mix, I think. And I'm trying to avoid talking about politics for the moment, or to talk about Kill Radio. I can tell you, listen to Radio Misterioso on Sunday nights. Great stuff. And that's from 8 to 10 Pacific Standard Time. And you'll learn a lot. In fact, Greg, I think, might be coming up to sub for Jeremy tonight. Jeremy's in New York. Well, I started some new work today, and so I guess it's a good day. And it's a good day for you, huh? And hopefully gave you something good to think about. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to kill your friends.